Elon wants to really make Twitter the best it can be, and he's been seeing a lot of backlash. And I'd be really interested to see what he does with... Welcome back to the Digital Die Podcast, a conversation about tech. My name is Darsh, and I am going to be your only host this week. Unfortunately, Jacqueline was at an amazing event, and if you guys aren't following her on Instagram, go check her out, at NBTJacqueline. But she was at a recent event for John Deere, and we're thinking about having an episode next week regarding everything that she just found out. But for now, you guys are just with me, and we're going to talk about Twitter, and a lot about what's going on with Twitter as of late, because it seems as though Elon Musk's Twitter is doing a couple of, not saying unsavory, but some unsavory things that are definitely rubbing some people the wrong way. And I want to break in and talk about all of it in today's episode. With that being said, though, if you like what you hear this episode, make sure to go check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen. We drop new episodes every Monday at 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern, and we love to have you and chat with you every week. With that being said, let's roll the intro. All right, so there's a couple of new things that are going on in Twitter this week that I kind of wanted to talk to you guys all about. And first and foremost, that's going to be Elon Musk and his chaotic changes to different Twitter regulations. And the first and foremost, and I guess the most important thing that I want to talk about, or the thing that I find the most interesting, is going to be the fact that the Twitter checkmark, or the blue checkmark fiasco, is finally underway, where we're finding that a lot of people who have already obtained a blue checkmark through various means over the past couple of years prior to Elon Musk are starting to lose their verification access. And this isn't just a new thing or just isolated to Twitter at this point. This is something that we're also seeing across Meta platforms as well, such as Facebook and Instagram. So what happened was, if you guys were unaware, a couple months ago, maybe even actually close to a year ago, Elon Musk decided that he wanted to buy out Twitter. And after actually obtaining access to Twitter, he ended up firing a ton of people and he started implementing a ton of changes into the platform itself, how it runs, and just how they were going to go about making money. Now, what Elon Musk found was that a lot of Twitter services and their profitability was just coming from advertisers as a whole. And that isn't news for any social media platform, because I feel like that's where a lot of social media platforms do tend to make a lot of their money. And it's not really direct to consumer, rather it's direct to these companies who can set up advertising on these platforms. Now, Twitter wants to make it a point that it will not be solely reliant on advertisers for its main profit stream. And I think that makes sense to some degree. And if you guys hear me out here for a second, I'm not backing anything that Elon Musk says, but I do want to say that I think it does make sense, especially across so many platforms where we find that more and more advertisers have this power to restrict and disable different means of conversation. You can't necessarily search up without a set of filters pretty much on any platform anymore, where you can see like unbridled access to everything that's going on. Because if certain things are not advertiser friendly, then Twitter won't be able to promote them or show them because they won't be able to make any money because advertisers will then pull out. So when Elon Musk did take over, there was a ton of advertisers pulling out of Twitter and they needed to think quick about how to make some money. And the first thing that they ended up actually doing was introducing Twitter Blue. Now, it's a paid Twitter service which allows you pretty much to get a blue check mark and then access to a couple of new features, like I believe undoing a tweet within the first like 20 minutes so that you can edit it, and also getting access to just like more priority features, less ads, and so on and so forth. Now, when Elon had actually implemented this, it seemed pretty cool. It was $7 a month though, and that's where things get interesting. It came in at $7.99 a month, what I guess $8 a month, and Twitter was charging people for this, mostly just for the sticker, the verification sticker. And I personally, just me, I think that's a very interesting tactic to go about, especially when it comes to a social media platform that uses verification as a way to authenticate public figures, celebrities, people who are actually prone to having fake accounts made. And that's where a lot of this issue kind of comes into place now, because Elon Musk decided that he wanted to weaponize his shiny new $44 billion toy and just kind of start doing things that were a bit more controversial. And in this case, it'd be taking away the verification stickers without actually having Twitter Blue subscription. So people who have had a verified account for quite some time now are now going to see their checkmark disappear or fade off into the distance, so to speak, so that you can, I guess, buy one for yourself. It's becoming very much like you can buy a verification mark, which I think becomes a bit of an issue, especially when it comes to news. So I don't know about you guys, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this if you guys can tweet us at Digital Dive Pod. But I personally find that I go to Twitter to find news, because a lot of the time you can find immediate reactions to things going on around the world. And without access to something like Twitter, which is this just giant conversation Discord that's like public and open to everyone to read, we start losing access to actual real news that are coming from people rather than just big corporations and organizations. And big corporations and organizations definitely do get access that people just genuinely don't. But for big events that are going on, whether that be all of the protests that are going on in Paris right now or any other set of disasters around the world, we keep in touch with a lot of them through the social media platforms that give us that unbridled access. Now, what Twitter's doing here is pretty much allowing anyone to have a subscription for $8 and make themselves verified. And we've already seen some issues with this when it comes to, I believe even Donald Trump had a fake account made, and then Elon Musk had a fake account made, where people were making fake accounts pretending to be these figures in the media and tweeting out some outlandish things. I think that Elon actually saw the issue with this within the first couple months of actually releasing Twitter Blue, because there was reports of a Elon spam account that was posting a lot of outlandish things with that blue check mark, and you wouldn't necessarily be able to at first glance check. For the last couple of months, about 6 months or so, if you did have a blue check mark, whether it was organic coming from prior to Elon Twitter or if it's from Elon Twitter, there'd be a little eye icon underneath that badge. And that badge, well, that icon would pretty much give you information letting you know whether or not that was an organic tag that was made because someone was an influential person or if they actually paid for it through the Twitter Blue service. Now, it is a bit of an issue that we're going to lose that ability now. I wonder what Twitter actually plans on doing in situations where there are public figures who do need to have some verification access. But kind of going back into what I was talking about earlier when it comes to Meta, this is not a new thing. So funny enough, Facebook's Meta has pretty much come about doing a very similar process for Instagram, where they want to start charging for an Instagram-based service that is going to allow you to pay for a verification checkmark. And I think that this is going to become a more mainstream topic or a more mainstream thing over the next couple of years as we see more and more social media platforms trying to detach themselves from solely relying on advertisers as their main form of income and revenue. Although advertisers do play a big role in these companies, we don't realize how big of a role it plays. And I mentioned this a couple of minutes ago where it was very much just, we have seen the ability of advertisers on just multiple platforms, even YouTube. I don't know if you guys remember this, but I remember vividly there was the YouTube adpocalypse, where if you were part of the YouTube ad program, like AdSense program, you either got to stay on or you got kicked off. And then on top of that, you also saw a huge drop in earnings because advertisers were starting to pull away and away from YouTube and what they're able to offer. And this entire conversation isn't just isolated to Twitter, right? Because there is so many advertisers that just try to play this card of like, we have all the power and start pulling out from these platforms because they want it to be a certain way. And if it's not a certain way, then they're worried about their reputation being associated with content that is, I guess, either misinforming people or is just straight slander. And that makes sense from an advertiser's perspective. Don't get me wrong. But then on the other hand, from social media platform's perspective, they need the advertisers to run. And now what Elon has done is introduced this new way to start making money as a social media platform that gives people what they want to an extent while still being able to get themselves some new income and new revenue that wouldn't make them solely reliant on these advertisers. So that's kind of where the story is at right now. And I'd be really curious to hear what you guys all think about it, because I think that this is a very interesting change in social media and it's something that we definitely will be seeing more of over the next couple of years. And I'd be curious to know just whether or not you guys are going about paying for Twitter Blue. And so with that being said, I encourage you to tweet us at Digital Dive Pod and let us know, are you guys getting Twitter Blue? Is this something that you want? Why do you want it? I'd love to hear your take on that. But with that being said, I'm not done with all of the Twitter stories for today. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Substack. So it's effectively a newsletter that's a blog. Let me explain. So it is a blogging platform with a built-in newsletter feature that pretty much sends out email newsletters automatically once a post has been published and can be like in this set for subscribers to view. Now, if you are set as a subscriber to a newsletter or to one of these blogs, you will get an email the moment it comes out in a newsletter format that kind of gives you the whole blog in a more condensed or I guess more newsletter format. Now, what has come into effect, I guess, as of today, pretty much, like, this has been like a very new topic, and I'm recording this a little bit later in the week than usual. It's currently April 7th, and Twitter has been going a bit berserk about the fact that anyone who has been trying to share Substack links haven't been able to actually receive any engagement from any of these posts. So Twitter users cannot now retweet or like tweets with Substack links embedded in them, and Substack writers cannot embed tweets into their posts. So it goes both ways here. Now, at first, it came to light as a glitch. The Substack like help team and support team were pretty much saying like, oh, this is just some kind of issue. We're going to look into it and see if we can fix it. What actually ended up happening is that Twitter seems to be more in a war with Substack. Now, Substack writers began noticing yesterday that they were no longer able to embed these tweets, which they initially, again, thought was a technical issue. And then now we're thinking it's more related to Twitter switching over to its new, and I say this with quotations, heavily criticized API plans, as there seems to be this more going on here within this overall topic. So Substack founders came out and came forward and said that it is really disheartening to see that like we are no longer able to communicate with Twitter and our platform. And it seems that this might be a bigger power play from Twitter itself. Now, Twitter itself once ran a Substack alternative called Revue. Now, the company shut down the newsletter platform shortly after Elon Musk took over. But what seems like it might be the case is that Elon Musk might actually go about re-implementing Revue and start sharing it with the Twitter Blue people, maybe. Like, if you have Twitter Blue, you can share it. Or even on the flip side, anyone can use Revue. And I think this kind of makes a lot of sense for Elon Musk, who has been making a big play for, one, free speech, but then for, two, also to just make Twitter profitable. And over the last year or so, since Elon Musk acquired Twitter for $44 billion, its valuation recently actually came out to $22 billion, which only can imply that the work that he has done at Twitter hasn't necessarily been the most insightful or empowering, which I guess is just maybe my take, but a $22 billion loss seems like quite a bit. Now, looking a little bit into Revue, Revue was an editorial newsletter service for anyone from aspiring writers to larger publications to start and publish a newsletter. Now, Revue's integration with Twitter helped newsletter creators promote their content and find new audiences. So it's effectively using like Twitter as an algorithmic platform to push out newsletters to people, which I think genuinely actually kind of sounds interesting, because newsletters are one of those things that you have to share more so via word of mouth or create some really good value props to be able to sell through social media ads like Instagram or on Facebook. And what I think is really interesting about Twitter Revue is that because it has been shut down since Elon Musk took over, what if his entire plan was to kind of take down Revue for a bit and then come back with it later? And he's starting to implement more of a subtle kind of hostile takeover on the newsletter department, I'd say, or the newsletter category. Elon wants to really make Twitter the best it can be, and he's been seeing a lot of backlash about all of the very interesting changes that he's made so far. And I'd be really interested to see on what he does with Substack now, whether or not he plans to implement them back in a little bit, or if he's doing this maybe as a giant press release or a way to capture the press. So I don't know if you guys have noticed this. I think I definitely have. Elon Musk goes about doing things that are very outlandish and scene-causing, to say the least. He'll do things that get to the front of the media very quickly to draw attention towards projects that he's actually working on. Now, whether or not these things are good or they're bad, I don't know. They tend to vary. Like him smoking weed on Joe Rogan's podcast, for example, that definitely drew in a lot of attention to Elon Musk and who he was. Especially because this was a couple of years ago too. Tesla was still new. It wasn't as much of a dominant, or I guess really just household name. People didn't have a lot of faith in Tesla. And although this did bring a lot of negative attention to Tesla, it then brought a lot of attention to Tesla's stock, because then Tesla immediately flew down in stock. And so I think it's really interesting to see like how much, for one, he plays with the stock market, but for two, the things that he does that are able to grab media attention. And I don't know if that's just a factor of him being this huge public figure now where he's able to encapsulate this huge audience, or if it's more coming from a place of like the strategic planning. Elon Musk is no short of a genius. I genuinely think that he is incredibly smart, and he kind of does everything with a very calculated view. And I'd be really interested to see if these different small plays that he's making on the side that are gathering media attention are not necessarily a mistake or something that is meant to rival, like create unnecessary controversy. I think that it's all meticulously calculated and planned out. But that's just my take on it. And again, this is going to be a shorter episode. It's just me today. I'm just kind of talking to you guys about some new updates on Twitter that I thought were interesting and I wanted to share. Also, today, if you guys are celebrating, it's Easter Monday. I just hope and wish to everyone that you had a great weekend with family, whether or not you have today off or not. I just hope that you had an amazing Easter weekend and were able to take some time to spend with family and friends. With that being said, though, that is definitely something that I did like this week, and I do want to talk a little bit more about some other stuff I like this week. Although this might be a solo stuff I like this week, let's jump into it. First and foremost, I'm going to give a shout out to a TV show that I was binging literally right before I jumped on to record this podcast, and it's called Bodyguard. Now, it's done in collaboration with BBC. It's a Netflix exclusive, I believe, but it's effectively a 6-episode limited series about a private protection officer, or a bodyguard, who is protecting the Home Secretary for Britain. And I think that's just a really interesting political action drama. I thought that the entire premise was a little boring at first, and as I started getting more and more into it, I just became hooked. And so if you guys are interested in shows like that, that are more politically charged and have a lot of really unique insights, or I guess just like have that like political and cop kind of view to things, I'd recommend it. It's called Bodyguard. I've been really enjoying it as of late, and I honestly have been recommending it to pretty much everyone. So go check it out. The second one I have for this week is actually a book that I've been reading. I bought it a couple months ago. I hadn't necessarily actually started it until recently, and I've been really enjoying it so far. It's called The Bomber Mafia by Malcolm Gladwell. Now, one of the reasons that I really like it is that it is a nonfiction book. It's based on a real story of something that happened in World War II, which is pretty much the bomb, like how aerial bombing was starting to be implemented throughout the war, and how it became probably one of the top strategies in terms of like intimidating your enemies. And so I think that this was a phenomenal book, and I've been reading it so far. I'm about at page 80, I believe, so I'm still not too far in, but I've been really enjoying the book so far. And if you guys are into nonfiction books that are a little bit more about history, I'd highly recommend The Bomber Mafia. It is an amazing, amazing read. I definitely am a big fan of Malcolm Gladwell, and I can't really recommend his books enough. So if you guys haven't checked him out, definitely go check him out as well. With that being said, though, thank you so much for listening to this episode, everyone. I hope you did enjoy it. And if you did, make sure to go down below and just leave us a review. We love the feedback. We love to hear what you guys think of the episode. And ultimately, if you could send us a follow as well, that would be fantastic. Is how you guys can keep up to date with the latest episodes that do come out every Monday at 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern. I also want to give a huge shout out, as always, to Adil Constantine for the amazing intro and outro music that you're about to hear. And I want to give a huge shout out to all of you for taking the time to come listen and sit down and just have a chat with a friend. Really appreciate it, guys. We'll catch you next week on Monday, 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern. Bye.